You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Thank you very much for being here with us today. I know you have a very busy schedule, and I'm very glad that you're in here with us today. So let's just crack into it, and let's start with the zero carbon bill. Obviously, it's something that you're very passionate about. Can you tell us a little bit about what the zero carbon bill is all about?
Yeah, so public consultation closed about a week ago, and we got just over 15,000 submissions. So it's obviously had a lot of public interest. And the point of the zero carbon bill is to try and create certainty in an uncertain world, right? So what the bill primarily does is to put a target in place for 2050 for reducing our greenhouse gas emissions down to what we call net zero. That's not absolutely zero. So, basically human activity will always have some level of pollution, but the idea is that we would then offset that pollution with, for example, planting trees.
Yes.
And so it's really a 30-year challenge for us to upgrade our economy, and this legislation provides the framework for that.
Why should we support the carbon bill? I know that there have been about 14,000,
15,000? 15,035 or something like that.
Brilliant. Yeah. 15,000 submissions for the zero carbon bill. So why should people support it? Why are people wanting to support it?
People want to support it because they want that level of certainty, right? They want to have a kind of a line in the sand where they can say, okay, now we know where we're going, and we can organise ourselves around that. Interestingly enough, big business is actually one of the strongest proponents for the bill. That's right, because New Zealand has had really, frankly, pretty wishy-washy climate policy over the last 30 years.
I feel like it's sort of a wishy-washy subject sort of worldwide, isn't it? People sort of go,
this is the thing, is that the Paris Agreement kind of created a level of clarity, and that was a huge signal to industry. Mm. And so this is kind of like our local version of that. And the reason why industry is so interested in it is, for them, if you're making a multi-decade investment, conceivably hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars, then you kind of want to know that the policy settings are going to stick over that period of time.
We're committed to something.
That's right.
What we want.
Yeah. And so if they kind of think, gee, that target's pretty hard, and it's going to exclude some investments, there's a level of clarity there, right? It's like, okay, so there's a line. We know that there's not much point in investing in stuff that falls on the other side of that line, but, we can have a lot of fun on the stuff on this side of the line. Mm. So that's really what it does. And it also helps with governments to create consistency across our policy. It helps with local governments to help them kind of plan for the future as well. So, for me, it's, I guess, the single most important thing about it is to kind of send that signal and say, this is what we're committed to. This is where we're going. We don't necessarily know 100% about exactly how we're going to get there, but we also know that there's going to be a big driver for innovation in order to help us get there. So it's a pretty exciting thing.
Yeah, absolutely. How likely do you think that it is that this government will want to take it on board and want to create those innovative ideas about zero carbon? Do you think that's going to happen?
We're totally committed to it.
We're
absolutely committed to it. So, but it's funny because there is sort of a sequence to these things, right? And so we do want to get the zero carbon bill into place. That'll happen about the middle of next year. Once it's wound its way through the parliamentary process, we're going to reform the emissions trading scheme. And if we get that right, that should also be a big driver of innovation as well.
What is the what sort of reforms are you looking for that?
Well, it's fairly technical, but the way that the scheme's being run in the past it's had really just a kind of a few hundred big industrial participants in it. It'll expand over time. It'll operate more like a proper market does. We've basically got to make it easier for people to participate
and people to understand. I think
they do not.
Yeah.
No, they do not. A lot of people still call it the carbon tax. It's actually not, right?
No.
It is a trading scheme. So if you're in an industry that's kind of got a high pollution attached to it, then you have to buy credits. But if you're in, say, forestry or something like that, then you're the one receiving those credits. And so it helps to shift the economy over time away from more polluting industries and incentivize cleaner industries as well.
Absolutely. Just finally, about the zero carbon bill, could you just sort of sum up why people should get behind it and why New Zealand needs the carbon bill now? Like, why we need to really make this move on climate, on carbon emissions now?
Well, I mean, the reason why we've got to move now is because we've frankly been you know,
not not moving.
I had some other adjectives in mind, but they're not really radio adjectives. You know, for kind of 30 years, right? We've been going around in circles. And you know, if you kind of think about the effects of climate change on the New Zealand economy, the effects of increased droughts on our farms, you had the Port Hills in Christchurch on fire. It looked like Sydney on a bad day.
I'm from Christchurch and the Port Hills, and it was a devastating, devastating
all
event.
Of that. You know, a few weeks ago, you had all of those logs that were washed down in Tairāwhiti and in Gisborne and Tolaga Bay as a result of those storms. So the costs of those events are mounting. And, you know, the Zero Carbon Act, it is all about upgrading our economy, right? It's about being more productive, higher value, better paid, cleaner, greener, more on brand.
Yeah, definitely more on brand. I think that's that's the main thing for me that I always sort of think about. I'm like, we're supposed to be a clean, green, pure New Zealand. And I feel like that, Zero Carbon is like the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Absolutely. So let's just move on to the climate summit that you attended in Fiji over the last week. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was all about?
Yes. So that was a gathering of Pacific Island heads of state, you know, prime ministers, presidents, and climate ministers about, you know, what is the Pacific's plan for climate change? And a big part of it is about adaptation, you know, adapting to the effects of climate change, but also a really big part of it is about how the Pacific Island countries themselves also get down to net zero as well. So one of the things that has been most remarkable, I think, about the Pacific Islands, given that they're at the absolute front line of this. They are the first countries in the world to feel the most devastating effects of climate change and have done the least in the world to cause the problem in the first place, is that they still say, well, no, we need to lead by example, and it's not just about, how we adapt and, asking developed countries for, aid to kind of help fix the problem, but how do we lead? How do we demonstrate that, yes, even, developing countries without a lot of resources can also
lead in this
area.
That's
right. And so I mean, my hat goes off to all the islands, really, because they are doing some pretty remarkable stuff.
That's great. So could you possibly elaborate a little bit on what some of the things that the Pacific Islands are doing?
Well, there's each island is kind of doing a different thing. The thing that's most common actually is that they're converting their electricity generation over to solar power plus battery. And some of them are going to be 100% electricity from solar in the not too distant future. And that actually makes a massive difference to them, because at the moment, or historically, they've relied on imported diesel to run generators. So ultimately, that's actually, it's not just good in terms of bringing down their greenhouse gas emissions, it's also good for their balance of payments, because they're actually generating all their electricity domestically as opposed to having to pay somebody.
Spending the money
at really expensive prices, right? Because shipping diesel across the Pacific it doesn't come cheap.
Yeah, crazy. So how could you possibly, are there any, lost my train of thought. What further things are the Pacific planning to do to tackle climate change? Are the Pacific trying to work together? Is that the next plan, or are they still working sort of separately?
It's sort of a bit of both.
I suppose it's hard.
And really, last week's conference was about it's sort of part of a process of building towards the next big global climate change conference in Poland at the end of this year. And they're basically trying to say, well, what is the voice that the Pacific wants to put forward in that? The Pacific has had a massive effect when it's got a kind of a unified voice in the past. It's had a huge made a huge difference. So, for example, the reason why there is a 1.5 degree global warming temperature goal inside the Paris Agreement is because the Marshall Islands and the other states in the Pacific got together and said, we will not let the Paris Agreement pass without that temperature goal in there. Because anything higher than that actually represents an existential threat to the low-lying atoll states like Tuvalu, the Marshall Islands, Kiribati, and so on.
Yeah, I suppose they are the most at risk. New Zealand, we are part of the Pacific. What are we doing to join? What else are we doing? Is there anything that you can tell me a little bit more, maybe aside from the Zero Carbon Bill?
We've got a massive domestic program, right? So like I said, we've got the Zero Carbon Bill, we're reforming the emissions trading scheme, we've got kind of some big domestic policy things that we've done, like banning new exploration for offshore oil and gas, and all of that kind of stuff. At the same time, you know, we are, like you say, we're part of the Pacific. We are a Pacific Island nation, and so we've got to think about how we work with our other Pacific Island neighbours.
And I suppose because we're the biggest, it's probably about helping out.
Yeah, to a large extent. So, well, there's kind of two things. One of which is it makes a big difference to the islands that we are focused on our domestic emissions reductions, because, of course, the more we emit, the greater the contribution we're making to their potential, you know, existential threat. So that makes a big difference. But, you know, we are investing something like $713 million in additional aid on top of our existing aid budget in the coming four-year period. And that's pretty much all directed towards the Pacific, and that's pretty much all directed at climate change in some way.
Amazing.
So what we're doing with our aid program is we're basically saying every single project, whether it's a, you know, a school or a road or a power plant or, you know, whatever it is, every single project has to help the islands to adapt to the effects of climate change and reduce emissions in
that's
some
great.
Way.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's about all we've got time for. But thank you very much, James. It's been wonderful speaking with you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you so, so much.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.